to begin by acknowledging my co-authors on this work and also the funding agency, which was the Columbia Rockefeller Center for AIDS Research. This was a pilot study. So I'm going to talk about how migration experiences may shape risk and protection for English-speaking West Indian immigrants to New York City, briefly describe the study that we did, and then point out some key findings from the study. West Indian immigrants are those who come from the Caribbean islands of Jamaica, Trinidad, Tobago, Grenada, Barbados, and the Bahamas, as well as Belize in Central America and Guyana in the north of South America. And this immigrant group has been coming to the United States for many years. They now constitute 20% of New York City's foreign-born population, and between 25 and 30% of its 2.2 million black population. We don't know much about the prevalence in this group for a variety of reasons. Most health statistics do not distinguish country of origin among black or other groups. And we, of course, people may not get tested, and we don't really know what the base population is often. So it's hard to estimate the prevalence, but we do know that 23% of black New Yorkers newly diagnosed with HIV/AIDS were foreign-born, and of those, 50% were from the Caribbean or West Indies. So in spite of the importance of this group, there's really very little known about its risk and sexual health factors and how migration might influence that. I just want to mention that, for the most part, West Indian immigrants come to the U.S. for economic reasons. There is some migration of sexual minorities, people who gay men and women who come because the situation in their countries is not conducive to that. But in this study, we mostly had economic migrants. So thinking about the country of origin context, we can note that the prevalence of HIV in the Caribbean region is the highest in the Americas, approximately 2%. Gender inequalities in the West Indian societies are prominent. Traditional relationship norms support early sexual initiation and multiple partnerships for men, but restrict power in sexual relationships for women. Violence against women is socially tolerated and only recently has been prescribed in the legal system. There's very little open discussion of sexual matters between adults and children and men and women, and homosexuality is highly stigmatized. So these factors might promote sexual risk in this population. And then when we consider the migration experience, we had several hypotheses here. We thought, first, in relation to gender, that there may be shifts in women's economic opportunities from coming here. The predominant pattern among West Indian immigrants is for men and women to migrate alone as adults, or for women to migrate first, as U.S. employment opportunities favor them. Indeed, the gender ratio in New York City in this group is 10 women to 8 men, which differs sharply from other immigrant groups. So they come alone rather than as family groups. And we thought that although West Indian immigrant women have high labor force participation at home, they have even higher rates of work here in the city, and this might create opportunities for shifts in gender power relationships, as women may be less dependent on men economically. We thought that this might have a relationship to sexual risk, as women would have greater ability to control men, their multiple partners, and their condom use. On the other hand, women's immigration status may keep some in positions of limited power in relation to men, especially when they have to rely on men for housing, economic support, or if they're not legal migrants, or they may work in low-paying jobs without benefits or childcare. So that was those were our hypotheses around gender. Around sexual networks, there are transnational ties among West Indian immigrants are strong, and we thought that patterns of circular migration might present opportunities for sexual mixing. And West Indian immigrants often tend to live in the high-prevalence regions in the city. There might be changes in access to prevention tools on migration. And then we also, although I won't talk about it this morning, very interested in discrimination, because we know that even though there's a healthy migrant effect, that this immigrant group, because they're black, experience racial discrimination that might have an impact on their migration experience, leading to marginalization rather than to mobility. But just to point that out, but I'm not going to discuss that further. So we recruited people from an STD clinic, sexually transmitted disease clinic of a public hospital located in the heart of the West Indian community, 36 women and 20 men aged between 18 and 40 years who were born in the English-speaking Caribbean, self-identified as black or African-American, and diagnosed with one of several common STDs within the past year. We did both quantitative assessments around sexual risk, travel patterns, and we did qualitative assessments asking people about their migration stories and essentially asking them to make two kinds of comparisons between their country of origin and the United States, and also how their personal migration experiences might have changed their views of gender and sexuality and their sexual behavior. So I'm going to, these are the three areas of focus today. Gender power, wider sexual networks, and access and exposure to information. So in the area of gender power, we first asked people whether coming to the United States had any effect, positive or negative, on their perceptions or experiences with power in their relationships. And we got a range of answers. So here's somebody who talked about an increase. Yeah, because I grew up seeing my father have a lot of power, and since I came to this country, I noticed that women is allowed to have power, or it's okay for you to yell back or say no, or I want to do this week, next week, you do what you have to do. This person said there was some change, and again, that's related, as we thought, to the economic situation. There's some change because I'm not staying home. I'm going to go to school and do whatever I want to do. I'm saying either you support me or you don't, but I'm not going to stay home and watch kids all day. And then finally, this person who said that there was no change in her perceptions of relationship power, I always give that man the power just because I just believe that my man is really the head. Now, we did not find that women who reported more relationship power were better able to protect themselves in terms of getting men to use condoms or not have outside power, outside partners. But we did find another theme that was really quite relevant in this area, and that's around protection, women's protection from relationship violence. This was a theme that was expressed by both men and women. So this man said, there isn't much violence in the area, talking about the area in Brooklyn, because of the way of the police. The way the thing is set up, ain't nobody want to go to jail. You know, you touch your wife, you're going to go to jail. Back home, the cops will come after the ass beaten. They take the man outside. Why you do that? And you know, he say, oh, you're talking. And you know, and the cops and the guy go up the street and drink a rum, and that was it, you know. So that people were pointing to a difference in the social response to violence or the threat of violence. And then this, similarly, this man said, from Guyana, said, I know the NYPD has become a friend towards women's violence. And I had a friend, actually, that used to hit his wife. And she'd pick up the phone and then call 911. And he dropped to his knees and start begging. And he never did that again. But the cops still came, even though she hung up the phone. So we found evidence that these structural changes actually influenced individuals' behavior. And that certainly could have an effect on sexual risk, and that seems quite important. Now, in the area of sexual networks, in this population, only 11% of women and 15% of men had traveled within the past year, and two of the seven travelers had had sex with someone from their country during their stay, and in both cases, it was unprotected. However, this didn't seem to be a lot of circular migration, at least from the perspective of the past year. We can't make strong conclusions about this, but we figure that this is a relatively poor population. They're coming to a public hospital clinic. However, when we did ask people how they perceived their risk in New York City, they talked about their changing networks in their new place of living rather than the circular migration. America is very big. There's a lot of people in the state, and to go out and have sex with just anybody that you don't know, you're putting yourself at risk, and that's like playing Russian roulette. There's a lot of opportunity here, and people just go. They try new things with people, similar to what we heard with the gay men in the last presentation. So they clearly felt that sex is more available. Up here, you'd be running around having sex with anybody and anybody you see, anybody you want. Down there, you got to pick and choose. Particularly for women, there seemed to be a change in the ability of women to have multiple partners. If a woman has more than one partner, it's easier to hide how many people you've been with sexually here, because you could have somebody out of state come back here, act like I'm still a virgin, because when I came here, a lot of people thought I was a virgin. I lived on it for a while. People believed that in the West Indies, they had access to information about a partner's potential past and present risk, sexual risk, and STI history from members of a shared network, and that that wasn't available to them in New York. So this man from Guyana said, if a pin drop, it'll be heard in the next village. So AIDS and everything, and who have AIDS, and this person suspects if they have it, and that's the type of thing that circulates. So you can't help but try to protect yourself. You come from a small speck in the Caribbean to this large, vast country. Everybody's busy running up and down, and you don't know who is who. So they perceived their risks as greater here. And similarly, women felt that they would be more protected by the networks at home. If I was back home, to be honest with you, I would have been in church. I would have been good, you know, because I have people there who would direct me, taking care of me, making sure I go to the right places. Up here, I don't have that, okay? And then finally, I just want to show you a bit about what people said about access and exposure to information and prevention messages. They believe that in New York City, these things were much more available. There would be a greater risk if I was at home than if I was here, because at home there are no places to go where you can find out information. But here you have more places than if you were home. It's more funded by the government here, and here it's like an open broadcast. It's easier to get someone tested. Up here it's way bigger than Grenada, so a guy might know a girl from somewhere, and when he starts messing with her, she might tell him, go get tested. And sometimes the man might tell a woman she should go because it's a big place. And, you know, a lot of stuff be happening, so everybody trying to be on the safe side. So there was a perception that greater risk, but that they also had greater opportunities to get tested and protect themselves. Here I think they're managing to control it a point because it's more in your face. So you have to become aware whether you want to or not. And finally, that sex is discussed more openly in New York City. It's totally different because in the U.S., you talk to a person, every third sentence in the word sex comes in, or gay comes in, or lesbian comes in. So you can get a lot of information about sex here because sex is openly discussed. It's in books, it's in magazines, TV, and radio. I just want to point out a few challenges in interpretation. People came at different time points, at different ages. Some came at a young age and have not been back, and they may have heard reports. It's difficult to separate developmental changes from changes due to migration. Their social circumstances varied at home, and we had limited information about that. And in remembering their past, people may remember it as rosier or more difficult, and they may want to create those perceptions in telling you about their situation. So all those things have to be taken into consideration in evaluating this data. But I'll skip. This is really just the summary, but I want to highlight that, you know, we're still doing analyses here on this data, but it really seems to be a mixed picture, and there are some paradoxes. So while there's an increase in protection from relationship violence, and that may foster greater protection, we noted that there seems to be an increase in women's sexual freedom, and that may increase risk. We didn't find a lot of changes in people's ability to get their partners to use condoms one way or the other, but remember, these are people from an STD clinic. And then secondly, while sex is more anonymous in New York City and people believe they have greater awareness of partner risks in the West Indies, on the other hand, they said that opportunities for knowledge and access to protection tools were greater in New York City. So I think we can say in conclusion that migration seems to increase opportunities for exposure to risk as well as opportunities for protection in this immigrant group. Thanks very much.